This is Bloomberg Daybreak for this Friday, July 27th, 2018. Coming up this hour,
shares of Amazon surge after profit more than doubles estimates.
Intel stock slumps amid signs that growth may slow.
The Bank of Japan moves to rein in bond yields.
Wall Street awaits the first reading on second quarter GDP.
And BP makes its biggest acquisition in nearly two decades.
President Trump's former personal attorney is reportedly prepared to tell federal investigators that Trump knew in advance of a 2016 meeting with the Russians. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm Rob Buschke. Ahead in sports, Zach Britton shines in his Yankees debut, but the big win came at a cost.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm John Tucker. Bloomberg Daybreak is being brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
U.S. futures and European equities are moving higher this morning with corporate earnings front and center. 6:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures, they're up about 2 points now. Dow futures up 13. NASDAQ futures up 25. The DAX in Germany's up 0.4%. CAC in Paris up 0.2%. FTSE 100 up 0.6%. Nikkei 225 in Japan gained 0.6%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong up about 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 2.96%. Yield on the 2-year 2.67%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.3% or 21 cents to $69.41 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.6% or $7.80 to $12.2750 an ounce. John.
We begin with earnings from Amazon. The company's shares are up 4% in early trading after profit that more than doubled projections. Emily Chang has more from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
Amazon earnings missed analyst estimates on revenue and the revenue forecast, but beat massively on earnings, in part driven by cloud growth and ad growth. The company talked up the Prime program as always and said that it's Whole Foods that's really driving a lot of new Prime memberships. Also talked about having the biggest Prime day ever despite that big technical glitch. Bloomberg is also reporting that the Pentagon is very close to issuing this winner-take-all contract for its cloud business and that really favors Amazon. Emily Chang, Bloomberg, San Francisco.
Emily, thank you. Shares of Intel plunged after its earnings report. The stock's down 5% in early trading after signs that chipmaker's growth may slow. That's despite second quarter results that topped estimates. Anand Srinivasan covers Intel for Bloomberg Intelligence.
Across the board, this is a good quarter. Now, you have to preface that from an expectation standpoint. AMD printed and AMD just, you know, blew the cover off the ball. So on a relative basis, maybe expectations are a little mismatched. But remember that Intel has 98.5% share, for example, in the data center market. And AMD has 1.5. So AMD has more room to grow.
ML Intel stock falls this morning. Shares of AMD are up about 3%.
We have a couple of energy deals to tell you about. BP has agreed to pay $10.5 billion for most of BHP Billiton's onshore U.S. oil and natural gas assets. The acquisition is BP's biggest since 1999 and includes land in the prized Permian Basin, the world's fastest growing major oil region.
At the same time, Chesapeake Energy has agreed to sell its Utica shale assets in Ohio to closely held Encino Acquisition Partners. Chesapeake will use nearly all proceeds from the $2 billion deal to pay down debt that has shares up 14% in early trading.
The two biggest oil companies in the U.S. report earnings today. Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger reports.
ExxonMobil and Chevron will post their second quarter results. Bloomberg Intelligence says ExxonMobil's positive free cash flow will more than cover its dividends, but the company will hold on to its cash rather than buy back shares. It may be too early for Chevron to restart buybacks, but executives may offer some guidance on the timing and size of the program. Analysts think Exxon will post a profit of $1.27 a share on revenue topping $71.3 billion. Chevron's profit is projected to come in at $2.08 a share on revenue of nearly $46 billion. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Jeff, thank you. It's a big day for U.S. economic data with the first reading on second quarter GDP due out at 8:30 Wall Street time. Economists forecast growth will come in above 4%. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice reports.
It's been almost 4 years since U.S. economic growth topped 4%. Would rapid growth be sustainable? Economists have their doubts about the rest of the year. Bloomberg Economics sees a variety of special factors at work in the second quarter data. Additionally, the impact of White House trade policy could derail growth in the months ahead. In the first quarter, GDP slowed to a 2% pace. One more thing, that surge in growth back in 2014, it was a 5.2% gain. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Vinny. Let's head over to Asia now, where the Bank of Japan today offered to buy an unlimited amount of bonds for a second time this week. The central bank is looking to tame a rise in yields that's come amid speculation it could adjust its ultra-loose monetary policy.
That move from the BOJ, a series of stimulus steps from China this week, and earnings, they were all in focus during today's trading session in Asia. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally has details from our Singapore bureau.
Japanese equities climbed for a fourth day, shrugging off a decline in Nomura Holdings following a profit slide. Intensifying speculation about tweaks to the Bank of Japan's stimulus program saw 10-year yields briefly trade above 0.1% against the BOJ target of around zero. But they slipped in afternoon trade as the central bank unleashed another unlimited bond purchase offering. Stock indexes in China and Hong Kong ticked lower, the offshore yuan bouncing off its weakest level in more than a year. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sal. Bloomberg Daybreak.
Julia, thank you. On the trade front, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer says a tentative NAFTA deal could be reached as soon as next month. That would meet a deadline favored by Mexico, but Lighthizer says there's still hurdles to overcome in talks with Canada.
U.S. relations with China, meanwhile, show no signs of improving. Lighthizer's playing down the prospect of a trade agreement with Beijing. At the same time, a top Chinese trade official railed against the U.S. trade strategy, calling it extortion.
And China is now expressing regret over Qualcomm's decision to scrap its takeover of NXP Semiconductors. It's an apparent attempt to avoid blame after Chinese regulators failed to rule on the deal more than 20 months after it was announced. S&P futures up a point. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. 6:07 on Wall Street. Let's get news from around the world this morning. We say good morning to Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Good morning, John. President Trump's former personal attorney is reportedly prepared to tell federal investigators that the president knew in advance about a June 2016 meeting where Russians were expected to offer damaging information about Hillary Clinton. According to CNN, such testimony by Michael Cohen would contradict denials from the president. Trump's attorney Rudy Giuliani doubts Cohen reported claims will incriminate the president.
As far as I can tell from the record, it is not corroborated by anything. In fact, it's disputed.
The former New York mayor called Cohen a pathological liar. Meanwhile, we're learning more about the Russian lawyer who attended that Trump Tower meeting. Here's Bloomberg's Martin DeCaro.
After it was learned that Natalia Veselnitskaya promised to deliver dirt on Hillary Clinton and then met Donald Trump's son at Trump Tower, she denied acting as a representative of Russian authorities. But documents reviewed by the Associated Press show Veselnitskaya worked more closely with Russian government officials than she previously let on. The documents show her as a well-connected attorney who served as a ghostwriter for top Russian government lawyers. Special Counsel Robert Mueller is investigating whether the Trump campaign colluded with Russians to influence the election. In Washington, Martin DeCaro, Bloomberg Radio.
The Trump administration says more than 1,800 children were reunited with their families by yesterday's deadline, but hundreds remain separated. A fierce wildfire in Northern California has killed a bulldozer operator as he fought to contain a blaze that injured three firefighters. British Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit options are narrowing. The EU's chief negotiator, Michel Barnier, rejected a key part of her proposal for a trade deal with the bloc after Brexit. Bloomberg's Emma Ross Thomas in London reports it increases the chance of a messy divorce in March.
The proposal was a complex, innovative customs setup, which was devised to keep everyone in May's Conservative Party happy. Brexiteers tolerated it because they would still be able to do free trade deals around the world. The pro-EU faction of her party tolerated it as it kept trade with the bloc free and easy. But Barnier has rejected it, sending May back to the drawing board with just 12 weeks to go until a deal is meant to be signed. His alternative? To join a customs union with the bloc instead, something that if May agreed to, she would probably be ousted as prime minister. In London, Emma Ross Thomas, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. Coming up on 610 on Wall Street, time now for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's Rob Bushka.
Good morning, John. On the surface, it appeared to be a great night for the Yankees. They beat Kansas City 7-2 at the stadium behind Sonny Gray, who tossed five scoreless innings before suffering a thumb injury. He picked up the win, making him north of 500. We'll await word on his status. Then you have Zach Britton. He threw a scoreless 1-2-3 inning in his debut. But the news not so good for Aaron Judge, as the All-Star went 1-for-1 before fracturing his wrist after getting drilled with a fastball. He'll be out at least 3 weeks. Skipper Aaron Boone.
Oh, I'm concerned, obviously. Anytime our, you know, players have to leave a game with something, and, you know, obviously Judgey, so important. So we'll just wait and hear what the diagnosis is and then go from there.
Miguel Andujar picked up his DH, going 1-for-3, and when coupled by the Red Sox losing to the Twins, it means New York's 4.5 back in the East. Series continues tonight from the Bronx when CC Sabathia hosts Brad Keller. Mets, they looked solid offensively in Pittsburgh.
1-0, Cabrera, it's a high fly ball, deep to right field, way back, Polanco watches it fly, and that ball is gone, a home run for Estrubel Cabrera.
Mets Radio, New York doubled up the Pirates 12-6, Steven Matz with the win. Cabrera went 3-for-5 and drove in 4. Series continues tonight from PNC Ballpark, Jason Vargas on the mound for New York. And news from NFL camps, the Giants have said they plan to address the contract situation of Odell Beckham Jr. very soon. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. John?
Thanks, Rob. Join us tonight for the Bloomberg Business of Sports Show when the hosts, Scott Soschnick and Michael Barr, sit down with the president of the NFL Players Incorporated. Hear how Ahmad Nassar runs the licensing and marketing arm of the NFL Players Association. That's tonight at 8, tomorrow at 11, right here on Bloomberg Radio, or download the Bloomberg Sports Apple podcast. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Daybreak brought to you by National Realty, developers of prime New York, Hoboken, Philadelphia, and Delray Beach real estate. Up to 20% return properties. See them at nria.net.
Global News, 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow at 617 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is out on customer terminals, bringing you all the news you need to start your day. Let's get a check of the latest headlines with Hannah George at the Bloomberg Daybreak desk. Good morning, Hannah.
Good morning, Karen. President Trump says U.S. GDP will be terrific. The highest estimate for the second quarter in Bloomberg's survey is 5%, while consensus sees an annualized pace of 4.2%. Shares of Amazon are gaining after second quarter profit crushed expectations. Cloud computing and ad growth were highlights. The BOJ offered to buy an unlimited amount of bonds for a second time this week. The move comes as the central bank tries to tame a yield increase, spurred by talk that it may consider adjusting policy next week. And BP is making a return to shale. The company is snapping up BHP Billiton's U.S. oil and natural gas assets in the Permian Basin for $10.5 billion. For all the news you need to start your day, check out Daybreak on your mobile phone on the Bloomberg Anywhere app. Karen?
All right, Hannah, thank you. And S&P futures are a little changed, up a point this morning. Dow futures are up 11. NASDAQ futures up 15. The DAX in Germany's up 0.4%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 2.97%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.67%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.3% or 21 cents to $69.41 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.6% or $7.70 to $12.2760 an ounce. The euro, $1.1629. The yen, 111.16. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen, is reportedly saying he was in the room when the president learned about the June 2016 Trump Tower meeting with Russia's officials offering information about Hillary Clinton. CNN reports Cohen will testify before federal investigators. The idea of impeaching Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein is not sitting well with Paul Ryan.
The Republican House Speaker says he does not support the move by some House conservatives. In baseball, the Yankees won, but slugger Aaron Judge fractured his wrist when he was hit by a pitch. The Mets were winners. The Red Sox, Orioles, and Giants lost. The Nationals and A's won. Global News 24 hours a day. On air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. It is now 6:20 on Wall Street. Look for a bang-up number on U.S. GDP today. And joining us now to walk us through the numbers, Carl Riccadonna, Bloomberg Economics Chief U.S. Economist. Carl, thanks for being with us. There was a lot of cheerleading last night, like the jobs number. Does the White House gets an early look at these figures, right?
Yes, the Council of Economic Advisors and also the Fed will get an advanced copy of the number. So I know President Trump giving a campaign-style speech suggested that it was going to be a terrific report. I don't think that he necessarily peeked in the envelope this time around.
He says he didn't
because,
see it.
He said he didn't see it in his own defense, but the forecasts for the number are quite robust. We're looking at probably something close to 4%, depending on what the revisions to the back months look like.
Yeah, we had a guest on from Barclays earlier. Their call is for what, 5.2%, which was a pretty bang up number if that comes to fruition. Explain to everybody. Yeah, explain to everybody the mathematics behind it. So when you go from 2% growth to 3% growth, it sounds like it's just 1%. In reality, that is a huge figure.
It's not small beer, certainly, as we're looking at a $20 trillion nominal GDP economy. So 1% has dramatic implications for things like inflation dynamics, the pace of job creation in the labor market, really large consequences. And certainly if we're seeing something with a five handle, that'll be a remarkable development. We did see a 5.2% growth in September of 2014 or in Q3 of 2014. These are not sustainable numbers for the economy. The trend growth rate for the economy is closer to 2%. So the thing we have to keep in mind is a lot of Q2 will be due to idiosyncratic factors, so payback for a soft Q1, first of all, but also people positioning ahead of the trade war, some one-time benefits from tax reforms and whatnot, and instead we need to focus on what the sustainable pace of growth would be, which as we look to the second half of the year, it seems to be something just shy of 3%. So still very good numbers, but that barn burner of Q2 will not be a template of what to expect in the second half and even into next year.
Even the sustainable figures, that's a pretty good party, and that's a pretty big punch bowl.
Exactly. So the party and the punch bowl are always great in the latter half of the event. And that's exactly where we are now, where the economy has struggled for really the last 8 or 9 years, just slogging away at an underlying growth rate of about 2%. But dynamics have changed now, where the labor market is tighter, workers have bargaining power, household income creation is picking up, so consumer spending is doing better. We'll see that in today's number. But in addition to that, more folks are showing up to the party. And for example, business investment is playing a bigger role, and even government spending is starting to improve.
Okay, but who takes the punch bowl away, or is it about time to start looking to take it off the table?
Well, Jay Powell is starting to dilute the punch and ease the table towards or the punch table towards the exit. So Fed is just tiptoeing towards less accommodative policy. But until we really see evidence that there's an inflation problem here, he's going to be very gradual in his approach, and his colleagues at the Fed seem to support that type of approach to normalization as well. At the end of the day, yes, the inflation numbers have moved closer towards 2%. The income creation numbers are not there yet to make it sustainable. And so until we see something like average hourly earnings in next week's July jobs report moving towards a 3% trend, that's not going to sustain 2% inflation the way the Fed looks at the situation.
Okay, Carl, thanks a lot. And what's the consensus again, just to remind listeners?
Well, the consensus is about 4.2%. My team is just below that, 0.8%.
Carl Riccadonna, the Bloomberg Economics chief U.S. economist. GDP figures coming out this morning. And we'll break down the numbers for you live right here on Bloomberg Radio. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Brought to you by the 2018 Range Rover Velar. It brings together elegance and innovation like you've never seen before. Visit your local tri-state area Land Rover retailer for special offers. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 6:30 on Wall Street. I'm John Tucker.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures and European equities are mostly higher with corporate earnings front and center. Shares of Amazon are gaining after second quarter profit more than doubled analysts' estimates. Jitendra Rahl covers Amazon for Bloomberg Intelligence.
The profit beat was massive by every standard. If you look at every segment, margins improved across the board. If you look at the advertising revenues, continues to be strong, 130% growth in that segment. So a combination of these advertising plus the fulfillment by Amazon program picking up and private label goods, these are helping margins, and that's driving this monster beat on earnings.
And shares of Amazon are up more than 4% in early trading.
Intel stock is lower by more than 6% this morning. Results from the chipmaker beat estimates, but shares are slipping as analysts see signs that growth may slow this year.
As many as 20 companies in the S&P 500 are scheduled to report earnings today. Some of the bigger names include Merck, Twitter, and ExxonMobil.
And at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time, the government issues its first reading on second quarter GDP. Economists surveyed by Bloomberg forecast growth of 4.2%.
The Bank of Japan moved to rein in yields today by offering to buy an unlimited amount of bonds for the second time this week. Bloomberg's Wes Goodman has more from our Singapore bureau.
Traders were pushing yields up, sort of testing the central bank, testing its pledge to keep 10-year rates near zero. This all has to do with the idea that they may tweak policy a little bit, they may make a slight change to policy in a meeting next week, but I think this latest move shows that the BOJ probably won't do anything more than make a couple of very minor tweaks.
And the Japanese yen paired gains following that move from the BOJ. It's currently trading at 111.15.
And it's 6:32 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Volatility Index report. The VIX fell for the fifth session yesterday to close at 12:14. And separately, in today's extended morning trading, the VIX currently is down 2% at 11.90. And that is this morning's Bloomberg Volatility Index report.
And futures this morning, S&P futures are up about 2 points. Dow futures up 21. NASDAQ futures up 18. The DAX in Germany's up 0.4%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 2.97%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.67%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.25% or 18 cents at $69.43 a barrel. And COMEX gold is down 0.7% or $8.20 at $12.27.10 an ounce. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. 6:33 on Wall Street. Let's get news from around the world this morning. And we say good morning to Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you, John. President Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, is lashing out at the president's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, calling him a pathological liar. The remarks come amid a CNN report that Cohen claims Trump had advanced knowledge of a June 2016 Trump Tower meeting in which Russians were expected to offer his campaign dirt on Hillary Clinton.
There's no doubt in my mind that he's just not credible. I would not accept him as a witness, as a prosecutor. If Mo has any other kind of case, this is the kind of witness that can really destroy your whole case.
Meanwhile, House Intelligence Committee member Democrat Eric Swalwell was asked about the report.
The significance here about what is being said is that a candidate for president
knew that a foreign adversary, the Russians, were seeking to help his campaign. And that, I think, cannot be lost. And that is what we have to guard against in future elections.
Cohen will reportedly testify before federal investigators. President Trump talked trade and the economy during a visit to a recently reopened steel plant in Granite City, Illinois. The president also pointed a finger at the media.
They're dying to see us make a little bit of a mistake. They analyze every word. They say, did he say that? Could it have been? Did he say something positive about Russia? I think he loves Russia.
The president's daughter, Ivanka, also traveled to Illinois with her father. White House officials say North Korea released the remains of some U.S. war dead on the 65th anniversary of the armistice. A bulldozer operator has died, and several firefighters and civilians have been injured in the wildfires burning across California. In Greece, the wildfires near Athens are under control. Bloomberg's Paul Tugwell is in Athens.
They left as many as 83 people dead, 187 wounded, and dozens missing. The high number of unaccounted for people means the death toll is likely to rise further. With the 3 days of national mourning period ending Friday, discussions will now focus on who is responsible for the slowness in notifying the population of the approaching danger. Opposition parties will likely accuse the government of not acting quickly enough. In Athens, Paul Tugwell, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. Coming up on 6:36 on Wall Street, time now for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's Rob Bushka.
Good morning, John. A bittersweet night for the Yankees as they crush the Royals 7-2 in the Bronx, first and foremost picking up a game on Boston, who lost to Minnesota. But a double dose of injuries hit as All-Star Aaron Judge was beaten by a 93-mile-an-hour heater, fracturing his wrist. It'll be at least 3 weeks before he can swing a bat. Aaron Hicks knows they're talented enough, though, to pick up the slack.
You're looking at a guy that hits 50 home runs for a team, and he's a big part of our lineup. So we got to figure out a way to win games and continue to keep it pushing.
Miguel Andujar picked up for Judge as the DH. Then there's Sonny Gray, who's pitched better of late. He hurled five scoreless innings before leaving with a thumb injury. Manager Aaron Boone.
He's been examined by the doctors. We think it just hit the muscle part of the thumb. But the tech is coming back with Judge, and they'll x-ray him then as well, just to be... for precautionary reasons.
On the positive side from the bullpen, newly acquired Zach Britton tossed a scoreless eighth inning, retiring the side in order, fanning one in his debut. Series continues tonight as Kansas City sends Brad Keller to face CC Sabathia. Yankees are 4.5 out of first, but looking great for the wild card with a 5.5 game lead. Mets unloaded in Pittsburgh, dropping a dozen on the Pirates en route to a 12-6 win. Steven Matz got plenty of support, mostly from Esdrubal Cabrera, who drove in four, going 3-for-5, including a home run. Jason Vargas takes on former Yankee Ivan Nova tonight from PNC Ballpark. In NFL news, the Giants say they'll address a long-term deal with star wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. in the near future. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. John?
Rob, thanks a lot. What constitutes harassment on the job? That's a question that was addressed recently in a Washington, D.C. courtroom when a Native American attorney brought a case against a colleague who displayed Washington Redskins memorabilia. Nancy Lyons has details from the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
Jody Tallbear works at the Department of Energy and filed complaints against several co-workers.
A leadership trainer who wore a tie during a presentation and mentioned the Redskins, and another attorney who left a flyer from the Subway sandwich shop on her desk that had a Redskin special.
Bloomberg Law's Patrick Dorian says she lost her harassment claim.
The court said that this was not of the nature of something that under the law is recognized as harassment, but did say that she could go forward with part of her retaliation claim.
In Washington, Nancy Lyons, Bloomberg Radio.
And it's now 6:38 on Wall Street. And it is time now for the Bloomberg Small Business Report. Mortgage rates are up substantially from year-ago levels, and small businesses connected to the housing and lending industries are starting to feel the pain. Mortgage refinancing, the lifeblood of many of these small institutions, has dried up. Doug Duncan is chief economist at Fannie Mae, the largest U.S. home funding source.
When we survey them, and we do that quarterly, we're seeing two significant things. One is
broad-based expectation of current and future declining profits because of that drop in volumes. And the second thing is when we ask them what things they're focusing on, we give them 10 or 11 things, that the cost cutting has risen from 9th to 3rd.
Duncan says those small businesses are prospecting for new business as desperately as they can. And at the same time, they recognize there's a turn that's going on that's going to be sustained. There is, as he puts it, lots of pressure in the small business component of mortgage lending. And that is today's Bloomberg Small Business Report. It is now 6:39 on Wall Street.
The following is from the Bloomberg View, the editorial page of Bloomberg Opinion.
This editorial was written by the Bloomberg View editorial board. President Trump's talks on trade with European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker seem to have gone well, by contemporary standards anyway. Trump agreed for the moment not to escalate the quarrel he started, and the two sides now say they'll work to lower tariffs and expand trade. More action will be needed before it will be safe to conclude that Trump is beginning to see the benefits of international commerce, but this week's shift is encouraging. A comprehensive agreement that promotes two-way trade would be entirely welcome. The U.S. president reverses himself with such bewildering frequency that one can take nothing for granted, but at the moment, his reckless tariffs are great strategy seems to be under review. Let's hope so. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg View editorial board. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN go on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been the Bloomberg View.
Bloomberg Opinion editorials can be heard every weekday at this time. Join Bloomberg Radio this morning at 8:30 Wall Street time when we walk you through the GDP numbers. Bloomberg Radio.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And at 6:47 on Wall Street, U.S. stock index futures are moving higher. We are watching more earnings cross the Bloomberg. Let's go to the first word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Good morning, Bill.
And good morning, Karen. Gains for the U.S. futures helped by Amazon's earnings. Dow futures currently up 28 points. S&P's rise 3, while the Nasdaq futures climb by 22. The U.S. 10 yield at 2.97%. Gold is down 5. And European markets are trading higher, led by gains in Italy and Spain. Back in the U.S. on the economic front at 8:30, GDP estimate 4.2%. And at 10 o'clock, Michigan sentiment. After the bell last night, Amazon Q3 operating income view beat estimates. Shares are up 4% in the pre-market. Intel is down 7% pre-market after its results, and Chipotle EPS beat estimates. Regarding some of the earnings this morning, Merck just came out beating estimates, also boost the year EPS range, and look for Colgate, Twitter, and Exxon to report around 7 a.m., Chevron around 8:30. In deal news, BP bought BHP Billiton's U.S. oil and natural gas assets for $10.5 billion. And in other news, Amgen's price target raised to a street high $2.28 over at Goldman Sachs after their results. Wrapping things up, Juniper was downgraded to market perform at BMO, and XPI upgraded to buy at Jefferies, and Deckers downgraded to hold over at Stiefel. Live from the First Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, thank you, Bill. To hear live breaking news of your Bloomberg, type Squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. And just looking again at Merck, second quarter profit beating analyst estimates. Second quarter sales also beat, and it boosted its year-end earnings per share range. And we'll be watching those shares in early trading. Right now, just 248 shares moving. It is up 0.7%. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, is ready to testify before federal investigators that he was present when the president was informed of an offer of material detrimental to Hillary Clinton ahead of a June 2016 Trump Tower meeting. That's according to CNN. The meeting was attended by the president's son, Donald Trump Jr. Official results show cricket star Imran Khan won in Pakistan's polls. Khan will now have to form a coalition government. In baseball, the Yankees won, but slugger Aaron Judge fractured his wrist when he was hit by a pitch. The Mets were winners. The Red Sox, Orioles, and Giants lost. The Nationals and A's won. Finally, from Daybreak on the Bloomberg Terminal, It's Asia's second most expensive home. According to the South China Morning Post, casino mogul Pansy Ho bought a house that is 5,600 square feet with 7,500 square feet of garden in Hong Kong's famed Peak District. John, the co-chair of MGM China, spent about the equivalent of $114.69 million for the home.
What's the real estate commission on that?
No, it's a lot. I couldn't even afford the tools yet. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Mike LaVar. This is Bloomberg, John.
Thank you, Michael. 6:50 on Wall Street. Time now to check out what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer signaling that a tentative NAFTA deal could be reached as soon as next month. President Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, reportedly saying that Mr. Trump knew about a 2016 meeting between Russians and his campaign officials, and the government releasing the first report on U.S. GDP today at 8:30 Wall Street time. Let's get to these and other stories now with Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter. Let's talk trade. What did we hear from Lighthizer yesterday?
Well, Lighthizer testified on Capitol Hill yesterday, the U.S. Trade Representative, and he made a lot of sort of optimistic comments about the potential for a NAFTA deal next month. I think that time frame is important, both because a tentative deal, that means a tentative deal would come before the U.S. midterms in November, and it would also potentially set up the possibility that the deal could be completed by the end of the year when Mexico's president leaves office. So this would be a significant development if it happens, but It's a little bit hard to separate the rhetoric from what's really, you know, the actual potential for a deal at this point.
Hey, I just need to break in right here and do some earnings. This Twitter second quarter revenue, $710.5 million. And that is a miss right now. The shares are down 9%, now 10% in the pre-market. Of course, we'll have much more on these results a little later in the program. Back to the trade and Lighthizer. The U.S. is downplaying hopes for a China deal anytime soon.
That's right. It's very interesting because it's kind of this, it's an extension of this sort of dual-pronged approach that we've seen from the administration on the trade issue, really kind of culminating this week with this deal that they reached with the EU. They're expressing a lot of optimism about cooling trade tensions, both on the NAFTA front and also on the EU front with the deal that was reached between Trump and Juncker on Wednesday, while at the same time, you know, kind of ratcheting up the rhetoric or keeping the rhetoric going strong on China and expressing a lot of, you know, pessimism potentially that stalemate that's been reached and kind of has persisted over recent weeks, that that's going to actually be broken. I think that serves a political purpose for the Trump administration that I don't think is coincidental. Trump campaigned very hard on the idea of really, you know, resetting the trade imbalance, the U.S. trade imbalance with China. And so I think that, you know, continuing to take a hard line on China while making deals or trying to show an openness to making deals with U.S. allies in North America and Europe certainly helps Trump with his base heading into the midterms.
Let's turn to legal developments out of Washington now. CNN reports President Trump's former personal attorney will tell investigators that the president knew in advance about a 2016 meeting. This is where Russians were expected to offer damaging information about Hillary Clinton. Tell us more about this report and the implications, if it's true.
Yeah, so this now infamous Trump Tower meeting that occurred in the summer of 2016, the White House and Trump himself and campaign aides have all maintained that Trump knew nothing about this meeting in advance. Now we learn through the CNN report that Michael Cohen is prepared to testify that he did, in fact, know about the meeting. That would be a significant development, both legally and politically. It could show, potentially, because we know that Robert Mueller is looking at Trump's tweets and Trump's public statements about this. It raises questions of perjury, whether or not that is something the special counsel is looking at. We really don't know. This is just me speculating. But it also raises some political issues as well, given that it calls into question Trump's own statements on the matter.
Okay, second quarter GDP, get a reading this morning. The president was commenting about it last night. You got to wonder whether he saw it and was commenting on the data that he got.
Yeah, the most interesting part to me of this is not that Trump's saying the economy is terrific, which, you know, shockingly, the president is boasting about the economy. what's most interesting to me is twofold that, you know, as you noted, he once again seems to be commenting on economic indicators prior to their release and raising the question of whether or not he's commenting on them after having gotten an inkling or seen himself what they're going to say. That would be breaking with long-held practice by the president and members of Congress, who typically don't comment on those things for a variety of reasons before they're officially released. It also was interesting to me to note that he was basically, even though he was saying the economy was terrific, he was kind of in the specifics lowering expectations by saying as long as the GDP growth number has a 4 in front of it, then that's going to be good enough for him, essentially. Some Republican economists have predicted that potentially growth could be as high as in the 5s. And so that indicates that maybe Trump knows something that we don't.
Okay, Kathleen Hunter, thank you very much. You can read more about these stories on Bloomberg.com or the Bloomberg Terminal. A reminder, you can follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio at Washington, Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. Earnings from Twitter this morning, and Karen Masco has more. It looks like the monthly users, that is going to be the big focus for investors this morning with this report.
Yeah, there are a few surprises here, John, including the fact that these came out earlier than we were expecting. Twitter saying monthly users dropped by 1 million in the second quarter, and it predicted the number will decline further as the company continues to fight against spam, fake accounts, and malicious rhetoric on its social network. Monthly active users were 335 million, a decline from 336 million in the first quarter. Though the measure was up 2.8% from a year earlier, the company expects monthly visitors to fall again in the current period. Twitter blamed the projected drop on intensified efforts to clean up the platform, stricter privacy rules in Europe, and changes to the way its service is used through SMS messaging. Second quarter profit and revenue did beat analyst estimates still. Investors are watching those numbers for the monthly users, and shares are falling, down about 15% right now. Colgate-Palmolive, meanwhile, reporting a second-quarter profit that met analyst estimates, that just crossing the Bloomberg. 6:56 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
I'm Ramesh Panuru, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Should the children of illegal immigrants continue to receive automatic citizenship if they're born in the United States? Does the Constitution require that they do? Each group in the debate over birthright citizenship says the Constitution plainly backs its side up. But the truth is that the relevant portion of the 14th Amendment includes a legal term of art that doesn't have a simple meaning immediately accessible to all. And since there were no illegal immigrants in 1866, nobody involved in that debate was thinking about how to treat their children. It's also not clear that arguing over birthright citizenship is a productive use of our time. Requiring companies to verify that all new hires have legal status would do more to reduce illegal immigration than ending birthright citizenship would. Fewer illegal immigrants would mean fewer automatic grants of citizenship to their children. Our efforts against illegal immigration should focus on employers and not on newborns, and not on what we think we know about the debates of 1866. I'm Ramesh Panuru. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or O-P-I-N go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And Bloomberg Opinion commentaries can be heard every weekday at this time. Again, Twitter down 16% in early trading. This is Bloomberg.